Free socks. Free socks.
Welcome to the Soul Mason Show!
Welcome to the Phil Mason Show. That was John Fogerty, center field, on the Friday edition. It's April 19th, 2013, and I'm happy to be able to bring this show to you on the various networks and affiliates, including at 5 p.m. Eastern on Max Sports Channels, and again at 10 p.m. Eastern, right before Alex Jones, on Talk Superstation. And we're real excited to be on these networks. We have a couple of announcements coming up next week. But first of all, it's baseball day, as the song indicates, center field. And joining us this week from TrueBlueLA.com is our friend and my friend, Mr. Eric Stephen. Eric, how are you tonight, man? Welcome to the show.
Doing great, Phil. Happy to be back.
I'm always happy to have you here. You know, I caught a lot of flack because you weren't here last time. Because I was telling people, too, I said he's going to actually interview at the game. I said, it's going to get that baseball feel. It's going to feel like a real baseball show. Not that the others don't. And then first we had technical difficulties. We couldn't get it together. And then what the heck happened in San Diego? What happened to this beautiful game of baseball?
I think the baseball gods wanted us to get together on the podcast because they struck us down with a crazy brawl because we couldn't get together. But, Zach Greinke hit Carlos Quinton with a pitch in the sixth inning of that game. It was last Thursday, and it was the third time he's hit Quinton in his career in about 31 plate appearances. And Quinton does have three lifetime home runs off Greinke, and from when Quinton was with the White Sox and Greinke was with the Royals, they had a history, and Quinton keeps sort of pointing to that as the reason he went out. And yeah, he is a little bit of a delay, but then he charges a mound and all hell sort of broke loose. But you know, Quinton has something like 50 pounds on Greinke, and Greinke sort of instinctively trying to protect his right arm, his pitching arm. He turned to his left, but then his left shoulder took the brunt of the impact from Quinton. And as a result, he broke his collarbone. It was a complete freak accident type thing. And but the Dodgers are without their co-ace for about 8 weeks. And, they're left with a lot of bad blood. And it was one of the most bizarre nights I've ever had, like covering a baseball game. I could say that.
Yeah, it seemed like it, because I didn't know what happened, and I had stopped recording, put the show together, sent it away, and went to sleep. And yeah. When I woke up, they had all these pictures, and I'm trying to figure out what happened. And I said, holy cow, that's nuts. But, my baseball coach, because I talked to him before, and then I talked to you also before I did Monday's show, just to make sure I had us all straight. My baseball coach, who is a pretty smart guy, he was a scout for the Cleveland Indians, among other teams. He's up in his 80s now, but he said to me, he said, Greinke's a genius. He said, the guys took him deep three or four times in his career. Greinke's popped him a couple times. It's 3-2. Greinke's in total command of this baseball game. Forget about that score. He's in total command. He's got a 3-2, and he took a shot, and he plunks the guy. He goes, Greinke's a genius. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it honestly wouldn't surprise me if he did hit him on purpose. I mean, it's not the smartest thing in the world, because he was the leadoff batter, and he did end up scoring and tying the game. The Dodgers did end up winning that game eventually, but you know, it's not something you would ideally do. But a lot of times, especially the whole, you know, settling a score, getting one back, or things like that, that's not the most rational, like logical world. So it wouldn't surprise me if that was the case. Greinke's been completely mum about what he said to Quinton when he stepped off the mound, and Quinton swears that he said something that made him charge Greinke, and we watched the videotape, you know, hundreds of times, and can't quite figure it out. And Greinke won't say what he said, and not saying it obviously his fault or anything, but it would not surprise me if there was at least the hint of intent on Greinke's part there, for sure.
Yeah, because like my coach said, you know, that ball zinged over Kemp's head. You protect your guys, and Greinke is a guy who would do that. But anyway, now he's out for 8 weeks. So, okay, but you have very great depth of pitchers you could put out there to replace him for some time. And I know it's difficult to replace an ace, but Chris Capuano goes out there, and then he yanks his calf muscle. This is just not real, is it?
Yeah, it's. I mean, like I said, the baseball gods are having a laugh at this, because you know, the Dodgers went into spring training. They had 8 starting pitchers under contract, and as we stand right now, they technically, because they haven't activated Ted Lilly yet, they technically only have 4 starting pitchers on the roster right now. And then what they're going to do is activate Ted Lilly next week to start against the Mets on, I think it's Wednesday. It'd be the second game of that series. They're down to basically 5 healthy pitchers once Lilly's active. So the depth, you know, it's a good thing they did have the depth, because it's being completely tested right now. The weird thing about Capuano's injury, which was a strained left calf, and they placed him on the DL, he said he initially felt something in his calf when running in from the bullpen during the Greinke brawl. So, like, it's like a twofold injury, you know, of that brawl. It's so bizarre. I mean, I can't really put into words how sort of crazy and crazy all this has been. And then, you know, the Dodgers, they had to get like 7 innings of relief the other night when Capuano went out, because he went out to start the 3rd inning, and that's when he left the game. So their bullpen is in a bit of a disarray right now. They have some off days to get some rest, so it's not so bad. But they're in a world of hurt right now, and it's you know, it's one of those things you're sort of glad they did have that depth going into the season at least.
Yeah, and I guess the Dodger haters, even more reason to point and say, ha ha, they spent all that money and look, they're in 4th place. And I try to tell them, baseball is a six-month season. And while every game does count, unlike a lot of sports, these guys can string some games together. I'm watching this team, and I'm thinking, how are they 7-8? Adrian Gonzalez is doing everything that they want him to do. Carl Crawford is playing out of his mind. AJ Ellis. I mean, you've got some guys that are playing good baseball right now, though.
Yeah, it's very weird. I mean, the offense as a whole, it's kind of weird because they just haven't been able to piece things together. Like, as a whole, they were decent in, like, getting on base. I haven't checked today, but they were like, 4th or 5th in the league in on-base percentage, but, like, 2nd to last in runs scored. It's basically been, in the early going at least, anytime they've been getting like runners in scoring position, they just haven't been able to get the big hit at the right time. So even in games that they've won that have been close, they haven't been able to like break it open when they could have. And then the games they've lost, they just haven't been able to get anything across. Like they lost 1-0 the other day in Arizona when Josh Beckett pitched his best game as a Dodger, and they didn't give him any support because they couldn't get a hit across. So it's been very, very frustrating because they've coupled the, you know, Crawford and Gonzalez sort of hot streaks with Luis Cruz is 4-for-40. Matt Kemp is sitting under 200 and he doesn't have a home run yet in 15 games. You know, Justin Sellers, they knew he wasn't going to be anything offensively, but he's there for defense, but he hasn't done much at all. So they're carrying a lot of sort of dead weight in the lineup right now, but you know, especially in the case of Matt Kemp, they can't expect that to continue. So hopefully that'll start to turn things around at least.
And that's what I tell people: close your mouth and watch out. You know, be happy that your team is doing what it's doing. But these guys, like Kemp, for example, okay, everyone struggles. He's going to be okay. I'll tell you who I'm impressed with is Kenley Jansen. He has 4 holes already this season. 4. A lot of guys don't get that many in an entire year. Incredible stuff for the bullpen, right?
Yeah, Brandon Lee is the Dodgers closer right now, but I think no matter how you slice it, Kenley Jansen's their best reliever. And, you know, some, including myself, I think he probably should be the closer, but he's their strikeout guy. He's the guy they go to if they need a big out. He's a definite, you know, big time weapon they have in the back end of that bullpen. So they've been sort of lucky to have him. And he, like you said, it's one of the great stories because, you know, a few years back he was a catcher who couldn't hit in the minors with a really good arm, and then they converted him to pitcher, and he's sort of morphed into one of the better relievers in the game, and it's just been remarkable. And he's just continued to do it year after year since he's switched over. So he's a remarkable story for sure.
Yeah, I enjoy watching him. And Clayton Kershaw, he's okay. He's 2-2. That's the other thing. Oh, whoa. No, listen, he's been a victim of little run support, right?
Oh yeah, and then I mean, even if you look like the last game against the Padres, Kershaw gave up 3 home runs, and it was only the 2nd time in his career he's done that. But I mean, he was otherworldly in his first like 3 starts. He hadn't even given up an extra base hit yet before he gave those 3 home runs on Wednesday night. So it's just you know, like like you say, he's 2-2. Do I expect him to give up three home runs, you know, every once in a while? Probably not. It was one of those outlier type outings, but I've been, you know, on the whole, I'm not – Clayton Kershaw is like the least of my worries right now.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Now, Hanley Ramirez. Now, I heard a rumor the other day that he is probably going to come back earlier than expected. What are you hearing out there about that?
Yeah, definitely earlier than expected. The sort of 8-week mark from his surgery is May 17th, and he's vowed to come back before that. Mattingly said it's definitely not going to be 8 weeks. It wouldn't surprise me if I'm thinking like first week of May is what I've sort of thought about. But Hanley Ramirez said the other day he's gonna tweet when he's gonna come back, you know, on his Twitter account. And he said it's gonna shock everybody or something. So I was joking with someone today, or someone asked, he has a bobblehead day coming out on April 30th, and I doubt they care in terms of like he's gonna come back when he's healthy. But April 30th. It would be kind of earlier than I expected, and they would probably be rushing him back. But around that date, or maybe within a week of that, it wouldn't surprise me to see Hanley Ramirez back in the lineup, especially if they're still not getting the production from the left side of the infield.
Yeah, I can't wait because I have him on my fantasy team, and I desperately, desperately need my shortstop back. But, you know, when I see the Dodgers, I've seen a little bit of them this year. This is a team, even though it's monster payroll, they actually look like they enjoy playing together. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if they do have a lot of veterans, and they sort of go, you know, they have their own sort of way about going about their business and things like that. But yeah, there's not a lot of there's not like many cliques, I guess, in the clubhouse that I've seen, or there's not a lot of real animosity. They do sort of like playing with one another. I can say, you know, Kemp during the Greinke brawl, like he sort of lost it on the field because the players kind of knew because on the field that Greinke had broken something, but just the way he was acting, and they had said something. So at that point, Kemp really took that to heart, and he kind of went nuts. And then Jerry Harrison did the same, especially they said one of the Padres guys was making fun of Greinke for having a hurt shoulder, and that's what set Harrison off. But you could see the team sort of respond to that, and they were all rallying behind Greinke. So, yeah, I think they definitely get along.
Yeah, that's rare because usually they don't bond that quickly. But like you said, they're veterans. They all respect each other, and it shows on the baseball field. If there was a pleasant surprise this year, what would that be for the Dodgers? I know it's at 7-8. There's not so much pleasant stuff, but if there was something pleasant that surprised you, what would that be?
Probably Carl Crawford, because even during spring training, it looked like he might not be ready for opening day. And not only has he been ready for opening day, he's been pretty much hitting since day one. And he's been the Tampa Carl Crawford, and he's been a dynamic player at the top of the lineup, hitting, getting on base, stealing bases, extra base hits, playing some good D in left field, and just fully healthy. And it's what the Dodgers were hoping for, and even above and beyond what they were thinking. So definitely he's been, I would say, the most pleasant surprise so far.
And I have to ask, any disappointments thus far?
So far, it's got to be probably Kemp. He is coming off left shoulder surgery, obviously, and the team insists he's fully healthy, and I tend to believe him. But I think he's still dealing with some. They were talking about him dealing with some bad habits from when he was hurt, and like in regards to his swing and sort of trying to cheat a little bit on some fastballs, and it's kind of messed up his swing a little bit, and they're trying to fix that. But he just hasn't hit so far, and he's getting frustrated, I know, but he's putting in the work. So it's not that. It's just the results haven't been there. No home runs in 15 games and 60 plate appearances, and he's hitting under 200, but you'd like to think that eventually he'll work things out. So it's not a, it's not something that can be overcome.
Great stuff tonight, Eric. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure, Phil. Thanks.
And also, be nice to my Mets next week, all right?
We'll try.
All right. That was Eric Steven from TrueBlueLA.com. I suggest you get over there. It's the number one Dodgers site for a reason. And he also has a podcast I suggest you listen to. Coming up next, we'll be doing the Oakland Athletics Weekly Report from AthleticsNation.com's Mr. Alex Hall. And we'll be right back.
This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit philnaces.com. Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine, as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at aridihotel.com or email them at reservations@aridihotel.com. Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show. Hi, this is Phil Nason from The Phil Nason Show and This Week in Tennis. What I'm looking for, sports information, my first stop, as well as yours should be, sports-kings.com. Great information, scores, highlights, and exceptional commentary. You can find it all there at sports-kings.com.
Ladies and gentlemen,
tonight we come together.
Cool. And I think it's cool.
I'd rather see someone do that than put something on that's, well, just crap. It's all about
tonight. Phil Nason.
Some of the things that these people say.
Tom Donahue.
There is no nonsense here. This isn't knucklehead theater.
Jimmy Z.
That is such twisted logic.
Alex Jones.
You heard it here first. Now it's mainstream news.
Yeah, tomorrow can wait till tomorrow.
Ah, it's a lot of fun.
I said tomorrow can wait till tomorrow. It's all about tonight.
And we'll have fun, I promise.
Yeah. Weeknights starting at 10 Eastern on the Talk Superstation.
It's all about tonight.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. It is Friday afternoon, April the 19th, 2013. And on the line for the weekly Oakland Athletics Report is our friend from AthleticsNation.com, Mr. Alex Hall. Alex, what's up, man? How are you today?
Oakland A's, best record in the American League.
Yeah. That's how you are.
Yeah, that's how I am.
Perfect. What's going on with them?
Well, last week you asked me how I thought the A's were going to do in their upcoming series. I said they were going to take one of three from the Tigers and sweep the Astros, and that's exactly what happened. So I must be the smartest guy ever, right? No.
One of them, anyway.
The Tigers series started off with the A's first walk-off win of the year. That was kind of their thing last year, was winning in the final at bat in a home game. And they got their first one on a 12th-inning home run by Josh Donaldson. So that was an exciting way to get started, but everything kind of went downhill from there. The next two games involved the Tigers just ripping Oakland pitching to shreds, just destroying them. And at the same time, Justin Verlander and Anibal Sanchez shutting down the A's lineup, which had been hitting so well. But there was two starting pitchers in particular who got roughed up there, and it was Brett Anderson and Jared Parker. I'm not too worried about Anderson. I heard a quote from him on A's radio after the game talking about, he said he had his worst slider he's ever had in his entire major league career. And if a pitcher comes up and says he just didn't have his stuff that day, I take his word for it. But Jared Parker, he's the one I want to talk about because he's the youngster, and you never know when a guy puts up a big rookie season, is he going to build on that the next year, or is the league going to figure him out and he's going to have a little rough patch, or maybe even never replicate that success. Parker is sitting here right now with a 1080 ERA after three starts. That's rivaling Ubaldo Jimenez and Vance Worley for the worst ERA in the American League. And his peripheral stats kind of back that up. He hasn't gotten past the fifth inning yet. He's walked eight batters and only struck out four. And the league's hitting .426 against him. Now we're talking about 11 innings. So we're talking about a tiny sample size. And so when that's the case, what I like to do is go and look and see how he's actually physically performing. And in this case, he's throwing all the same pitches that he normally does at more or less the same frequencies. So it's not like he's, you know, like he doesn't have his curveball or something. And that's the problem. He's throwing all of his pitches and he's throwing them all at the same velocities that he did last year. So physically, he seems fine. He's probably not hiding an injury or anything. If he's throwing all of his pitches, he's not holding anything back, and his velocity's there, you figure physically he's probably fine, which means hopefully we're just talking about a talented young pitcher working through a rough patch, and it just looks a whole lot worse because that rough patch happened to come right at the beginning of the season when you don't have a good stretch to balance it out in the statistics. So as much as his performance so far should raise some red flags, especially, I can't emphasize enough, the eight walks to four strikeouts is an abomination. You can't do that in the major leagues. You can't do that in the minor leagues. But I am confident that as long as he's not hurt, which I don't think he is, he's going to work past it. He was a huge top prospect. He's supposed to be here. He's supposed to be good. And he was good. He was very good last year. So I expect to see him turn this around at some point in the future. You hear people calling for, oh, it's time to send him down and let him work it out in the minors against some easier competition. I don't think that that is the right answer here. When you've got a guy who's already had some major league success for a whole season like that, I'd like to see him work out of it in the majors. Maybe it costs the team a win. I don't know that it will, but I'm not ready to give up on Parker after three games. And I know that the team isn't either, so I'd like to see him work through this in the majors against major league hitters.
You know, it's interesting that you bring him up because we talked about him on our fantasy show on Tuesday, and we both advised that fantasy owners don't give up on him because his stuff is good. He's just running through a rough patch. Okay, he's given up a lot of runs, or earned runs, especially earned runs, 14, couple home runs. Lots of walks, like you said, very little strikeouts. But I think he can right the ship. I really believe so. Now, what about Brett Anderson? Yeah. What's happening with him? Because, you know, he's had a couple really good starts. It's just his record isn't so hot.
Like I said, Anderson said so much after the game. He said, I didn't have my stuff tonight. Well, that's not a direct quote, but paraphrasing him, he said he didn't have his stuff. And when you don't have your stuff and you're going up, for my money, the Tigers have the best lineup in the American League and maybe in the entire majors. You've got Austin Jackson. That guy is a beast leading off. He's going to hit double-digit homers. He could OPS 800 or 900. You've got Torrey Hunter, one of the most underrated players in the majors. Frankly, the Angels should have kept him instead of getting Josh Hamilton. I said that at the time, and I'll say it again now. Then you got Miguel Cabrera, Prince Fielder, Victor Martinez. I don't need to explain those guys. Martinez, career 300 hitter. He's had 100 RBIs four times. These guys, and then you've got Johnny Peralta and Alex Avila, who are above average hitters for their positions. The Tigers have a mammoth lineup. And, you know, if a pitcher doesn't have his best stuff and gets beat up by them, that's fine with me. But if for Jared Parker, if you're playing fantasy baseball and you're listening to this right now, pick up Jared Parker. You will not regret it. He will turn it around. He will keep pitching in the Coliseum in front of the A's above average defense. He's going to have a good year.
That's excellent advice. I happen to agree with you on that. Now, we got a couple injuries. Coco Crisp, right? Now, I know Cespedes is on the DL, and Sizemore's out for a season, probably out forever. But what's up with Coco Crisp?
Yeah, Coco, and this is not unusual for him. He had a little tweak in a leg muscle. It was in his groin. You know, when you've got a guy who's a speedster like that and his game is about sprinting around and throwing his body around, he's going to pull a muscle in his leg now and then. These things happen. In his career, he has a little bit of a history of these things happening. He missed a couple of games. He's already back in the lineup. Melvin gave him one extra day off yesterday, knowing that there was a full day off for the team today, just to give him back-to-back days to rest. He will be back in the lineup tomorrow being Friday, and I expect him to be fine going forward. Coco's a guy who's always going to miss some time here and there. It's, you know, he's going to have the little nagging injuries now and then, but he didn't go on the DL, and he's not going to this time for this particular injury unless he re-aggravates it. I expect to see him back in the lineup on Friday and moving forward. But Cespedes, on the other hand, he hurt his thumb sliding, which might sound weird. How would you hurt your hand sliding? Well, he was making a slide into second. He did something a little different in his form. Not sure if he was trying to block the throw coming from behind him or what, but he kind of lost his footing and slipped, and he landed really hard on his hands. And I guess he kind of overstretched something in his thumb there. And so it was his left thumb that was the problem. And you could see the next inning when he caught a fly ball and he kind of grimaced. And so they pulled him out after that. He went on the DL, but the reports so far are that he should be back after his 15 days are up. And he's already about halfway through that. So he'll miss this road trip coming up and then presumably come back during the next homestand after that. This is, well, he missed some time. He missed about 3 weeks last year with a hand injury. I think it was a strained muscle in his hand, if I remember right. So that's sort of the same thing. I don't even remember if it was the same hand or not, but hand injuries have been a recurring problem for him. But it sounds like he'll be fine in a small amount of time, and he should be back in a week or two.
Yeah, that's what I figured too, and I'm absolutely certain that he's going to start hitting as soon as he gets back. That's important.
You know, it doesn't take him long to get going. It doesn't take him long to make adjustments. And yeah, like you say, it should be quick for him, yeah.
But Jed Laurie, that's a guy, I'll tell you what, he's come out of nowhere, really. And from a fantasy standpoint, he is raking. From an Oakland A's standpoint, they're ready to put a statue up of him, aren't they?
That's right. You know, I got a little overexcited about him last week on here, and I said something like if he played 130 games, he could hit 20 to 25 homers. That's a little bit optimistic. I'll update that. I'll say if he plays 140 games, he could hit 20 homers. He could definitely do that. He's got some power. I think he's also got some good doubles power. I look back at a couple of the homers he hit against the Astros in Houston, and they were kind of cheapies. One of them was about 320 feet down the left field line. But he, you know, I maintain that he can hit 20 homers. He can hit a bunch of doubles. He doesn't strike me as a high batting average hitter, even though he's hitting 370 or something, you know, in the early season. He's probably more like a 270 hitter at best. But if you're hitting 270 and you get on base a bit and you can hit 20 homers while you're playing shortstop, you are a very valuable player. And A's fans are very happy with Lowry. There was a little bit of hesitation. Chris Carter was a budding fan favorite when he was dealt for Lowry, but Lowry has already endeared himself to A's fans, and you can tell he's already becoming a favorite. I expect him to keep playing well. Like I say, that batting average will come down, but he's going to keep hitting. He's going to keep hitting for power. And his shortstop defense is nothing special, but it's good enough.
I like that answer. I think you're right. I'll tell you something. Bartolo Colon, he's had three starts. They're all quality starts. What is he, 2-0, 3.32 ERA, his strikeouts, he's got 10 strikeouts and no walks.
Yeah, I'll nice, tell you huh? what, for my money right now, Colon is pitching better than anyone else in Oakland's rotation. That doesn't mean he's the best pitcher or that he's going to finish the year with the best stats, but he's pitching better than anybody. Tommy Malone is a close second, but it's the zero walks through three starts in 19 innings that I just can't look past that. That is in, That is very good. If you can limit walks for multiple starts in a row, especially one of those starts was against the Tigers. You know, you get through there without walking anyone. That's impressive. I feel like I talk about him every time I'm on here, but he deserves it every time. He doesn't throw hard. He paints the corners. He's very efficient. He throws strikes. He threw 93 pitches in his last start, 69 for strikes. I mean, the guy just eats innings like crazy. And I'm a big fan. He's been very good for the A's. And looking at this Astros series in which Colon started one of the games, the A's swept the Astros again, but it was closer than it was the first time in Houston, especially considering that the A's actually knocked out both Eric Bedard and Bud Norris. Both of those starting pitchers, the A's knocked out in the first inning after scoring 6 runs off each one of them. So 2 out of the 3 games against the Astros here, their starting pitcher was out during the first inning. And yet still, the second game of the series was a 1-run game. And the third game of the series, the A's built up a 7-1 lead, and then they got a little relaxed, and the Astros ended up bringing the tying run to the plate in the 9th inning. Ended up 7-5. I'm not going to lie, they're still going to be most likely a poor team, but there are some things to like on this Astros team. Chris Carter has started showing some power. He's hit a few homers, luckily not against the A's, but he's getting there. Jose Altuve hitting very well. He's already got several 3-hit games this year. He's got 3 multi-hit games against the A's. That guy is a hitter. And Justin Maxwell, their center fielder, I don't know a whole lot about him, but he seems like he's got a little bit of pop, and I've seen him make some pretty incredible plays in center field. That's a guy with some talent. He's not a guy I was very familiar with before the year, but he's impressed me in the time that I've seen him. So that Astros series, still nice to get a sweep, but Houston is already doing better than they were earlier in the year. And it's easy to point out, oh, the A's are 12-4, but if you take out the Astros games, they're 6-4. Well, the Astros are what, I think 4-11? Take out the games against the A's and they're 4-5. Hey, that's not so bad.
Nope, it's not so bad at all. Now, you had off air, you were talking about Michael Taylor.
That's right. The A's had 2 minor leaguers come up and play a couple of games in the last week. You had Michael Taylor, who came up when Cespedes went on the DL. He is actually, both of these players are connected to the old Matt Holliday trade when the A's sent Holliday to the Cardinals. They got back Brett Wallace in that deal, who was now on the Astros because the A's sent him straight up for Michael Taylor. So they didn't get Taylor for Holliday, but they got him directly as a result. He was a big prospect, and I'm not seeing it. He's got a long swing. He's nothing very special on defense. He's just a corner outfielder. He's never gotten a real everyday shot in the majors, so you never know. He's hitting very well in AAA so far this year, but every time he comes up and gets a chance in the bigs, he just never does anything. But it always comes in these 1 or 2 game samples, so it's tough to know if he just didn't get a fair shake or not. But I got to say, I'm just not that excited about him as a prospect anymore. He's starting to get into his mid to late 20s. I think he's 26 or 27. The ceiling is starting to disappear. It's getting harder and harder to see Michael Taylor turn into a quality major leaguer. But the other guy, Shane Peterson, he did come directly in that Matt Holliday trade. He plays outfield, but he can also play first base. He tore up AAA in a small sample last year. He was real strong this spring, and he was hitting over 400 when they brought him up just now. He doesn't have a whole lot of home run power, but he's a line drive hitter. He's going to hit some gaps. He probably profiles as a fourth outfielder who can cover, like I say, first base, and he made a couple of nice plays at first base in the games that he played against the Astros just now. So he made his major league debut in the second game of the series. He went 0-4, but in the next game, he got his first walk, his first hit, his first RBI, and his first run. And like I said, he made a couple of good plays at first. So he was just covering for Brandon Moss, whose wife was giving birth. So he only got a couple of games to showcase, but he didn't disappoint. And he's a guy who could play a role on Oakland's bench sometime in the next year or two.
Awesome stuff tonight, Alex. Thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, Phil.
All right. You can find Alex at athleticsnation.com, and we'll see him next week. Coming up next, Mark Berman will be here to talk about the Mets on the weekly New York Mets Report, and we'll be right back.
This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit philnasons.com. Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at aridihotel.com or email them at reservations@aridihotel.com. Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show. Hi, this is Phil Nason from The Phil Nason Show and This Week in Tennis. What I'm looking for, sports information, my first stop, as well as yours should be, sports-kings.com. Great information, scores, highlights, and exceptional commentary. You can find it all there at sports-kings.com.
Ladies and gentlemen,
tonight we come together.
Cool. And I think it's cool.
I'd rather see someone do that than put something on that's, well, just crap. It's all about
tonight. Phil Nason.
Some of the things that these people say.
Tom Donahue.
There is no nonsense here. This isn't knucklehead theater.
Jimmy Z.
That is such twisted logic.
Alex Jones.
You heard it here first. Now it's mainstream news.
Yeah, tomorrow can wait till tomorrow.
Ah, it's a lot of fun.
I said tomorrow can wait till tomorrow. It's all about tonight.
And we'll have fun, I promise.
Yeah. Weeknights starting at 10 Eastern on the Talk Superstation.
It's all about tonight.
Back to the Phil Nason Show. It's April the 19th, 2013, and we're winding things up on this Friday baseball show, talking Mets baseball with our friend from bloggingmets.com, Mr. Mark Berman. Mark, how are you today? What's up, man?
Nothing much, just hanging out, watching Mets games. That's my life right now.
Yeah, I argue more about the Mets than I do watch. If you look at my Facebook wall, my buddy's a freaking Colorado Rockies just fanatic.
I actually didn't know they had fanatics because at least in the doubleheader, there were like a couple hundred people in the stands.
Yeah, but they said there were 20,000.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I mean, I don't know if you saw the games, but literally – I can't imagine there were more than 1,000 people in the stands. I mean, it was freezing. I don't, you know, I'm not faulting the people there, but it was. I've never seen a stadium that empty.
Yeah, I know. I saw a lot of snowflakes, though. I watched game two because let me see. Yeah, I guess it was the first game of the doubleheader. I guess I watched where Valdespin misplayed a couple balls in the outfield. Those three balls got in between Tejada and Daniel Murphy. I saw that game. That came on before I had to record, but I didn't see the other two, thankfully. Jeez.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah, you know something? Cold weather baseball, that doesn't make sense to me. It seems silly that you would put these athletes at risk. I don't get it. What's up with cold weather baseball?
Yeah, there's no reason, you can't control the weather, but there's no reason to play in that kind of crazy cold. I mean, there are enough I wrote about this recently and a couple of years ago. There are enough domes and warm weather cities that you can play the first 2 weeks. You don't have to play in cold weather at all for the first 2 weeks. And I think they should do that. I mean, the Rockies, this would have happened anyway because this was the third week of the season and the Rockies would have to open at home at some point. So this was kind of unavoidable. But there's ways to avoid cold weather baseball, and baseball's just not doing it.
No, I know, and I wish they would. But, boy, I'll tell you something. The defense, what is with Ruben Tejada? He needs a roadmap or a GPS signal on the ball. What's up with that? He was not like this last year.
No, he was pretty sure thing with the glove. I don't know what's going on. You know, he made that terrible throw the other night that blew the game. He said it had nothing to do with the cold. I think maybe he's not concentrating. Maybe he just... You know how you make, in just in general, a person makes one mistake and it kind of steamrolls into more mistakes. So maybe every time a ball's hit to him, he's thinking, oh no, I better make sure I get this. And he just maybe tightens up and is thinking too much. But yeah, he's six errors this year. It's crazy.
I know. You know what? The same thing happened to Steve Sachs, if you remember.
When he went to the Yankees.
Yeah, and Chuck Knobloch, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole different issue. That's a kind of a yips psychological issue. I don't think Tejada has that, but I just think something's going on.
Well, all I know is every time the ball gets played near Tejada, I get the yips.
Yeah, I get a little nervous too.
Oh, but in the bullpen, that was rough watching that this weekend or this past series with Colorado, because to be completely honest, if the bullpen would have performed at even half of expectations, the Mets win three or at least win two games.
Absolutely.
Bad bullpen, bad defense, awful, 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 awful. And now Ike Davis, people wrote to me and asked me what you guys thought about Ike Davis. Now I guess I can go first.
Okay. Sure.
My thing is this: I think that he's just a slow starter. I don't think that Valley Fever had anything to do with last year, now that I see that he's doing the same thing this year. Although he does have more RBIs at this point this year than last year and home runs. I just think the guy's a slow starter. I think he presses and he swings at bad pitches. What do you think?
He's definitely a slow starter. He said that in the past. And I think I even talked about this a couple of weeks ago. 2 years ago when he got injured, he was off to a great start, and this is the first time he's ever been off to a great start like that. And he was thinking, oh my God, I'm gonna have a great year. So he's definitely a slow starter. Last year was just a joke. I mean, he didn't start getting going until, you know, middle of June, I think. It's okay to be a slow starter for the first, I don't know, 2-3 weeks, but you got to start picking it up. So he had an RBI single in his last at bat. So maybe this is the beginning of picking it up, because they can't suffer through another, you know, 2.5-3 months like they did last year.
Yeah, but who do you put in there?
Nobody. I mean, you have to let him work it out. And if he does it again this year, then you have to start thinking, is this guy the answer at first base for us long term?
Yeah. Because
if this is going to happen every year, you can't get half a season out of a guy. It just doesn't make any sense.
So when this happens for another 2 or 3 more weeks and I start talking about trading him, you're not going to, like, flame me?
I won't flame you. I've never flamed anybody. It has some connotations that I don't really like. But thank you.
You know what I mean. You got them wound up last year.
I know.
That was
I'm a believer in Ike Davis, but, you know, I'll be less of a believer if it happens again.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think you're right. I want to be patient with him, but you know how I am. I think it's the fantasy baseball player in me, and I just say I don't get attached. I haven't really been attached to anyone on the Mets since 1977. Like I said, on this so many times. If they can trade away Tom Terrific for a bag of baseballs, then no one is safe. No point in getting attached. But you know something, I got to tell you. I'm starting to get those little feelings about getting attached to this young fella named Matt Harvey.
Oh, man.
He is so good, isn't he?
It's just unbelievable. I mean, every start, he just keeps looking better and better. I only saw part of the game on Saturday, the taking the no-hitter into the seventh inning. But he just looked really good. It was cold. He was able to just blow off the cold and just make his pitches.
I wanted to see him pitch in Colorado, but I'm glad he's pitching tonight against Steven Strasburg.
That's going to be exciting.
That's going to be exciting. I think they'll sell out Citi Field.
I haven't thought about that. You know, if anything could sell it out, it would be that.
Should be that.
You'd hope so. And it's a Friday night. It should. And if the weather's going to be good, it'll be close to a sellout.
What are you expecting from him tonight?
You know, I'm expecting him to pitch really well. I'm not expecting another no hitter into the seventh inning, and to give up, you know, one or two hits. The Nationals have a pretty good lineup, but I'm expecting, you know, seven innings, you know, no more than two runs. And unfortunately, going up against Strasburg, I expect the Mets to get, you know, hopefully they'll get a couple of runs also. But it should be just, hopefully it's just a great old-fashioned pitcher's duel.
It's been a long time since we had one of those.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time.
Yeah, I was just trying to think. Did we have any earlier this season? Would Nice pitch well? Did he go up against any good pitchers?
I don't think so. The last time we saw a real good one? Wow. I don't even think we saw one last year, even though Dickey was dominating everyone.
It was a Seaver-Bob Gibson game from 1972, I believe.
Perhaps that was the one. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, most people that are listening can't even remember that far back, unfortunately.
Like 1972? In the old days, did they have baseball back then and TV and stuff?
Yeah, TV, yeah.
Sure.
Did they have cars? Buses? Did they take they didn't take the subway. They took a donkey.
Yeah, but I want to tell you.
But I got to tell you this. I think Strasburg is struggling, and I think the Mets can actually tag him. You know, the Mets lead the majors in on-base percentage. And that's incredible.
They're right up there in average and leading the league in runs scored, I believe, or right up there.
Top eight or better in all categories offensively.
It's a surprise that they're only 7-7 or 8-8, whatever their record is.
No, it's not. The bullpen sucks.
Yeah. But that's why, obviously. But looking at it, you think their record would be good.
Yeah, but can they sustain it? That's the whole thing. I think offensively you can, I think. But if your pitching isn't there, then you got guys going up there and start pressing because they know they got to come up with the big stuff. The guy I'm happy about, Daniel Murphy's changed his approach at the plate. You know, he used to be one of those plate protectors, and now he's hitting the ball. He's looking to lift the ball a little bit, and he's already had two home runs. He's a third of the way from last year already.
Yeah, I'm happy about that. I mean, I don't expect him to hit, you know, 25 homers, but a guy like him should be hitting 15 homers a year. He's big and strong, and he's got a great swing, so he should have more power than he's been showing. So, yeah, he's got the two homers, got 11 RBIs, batting .352. Can't complain about that. So hopefully, you know, he'll be, you know, have a really good year. Defensively, he's looking fine this year.
Yeah, I think so too. He needs to stroke 15 out to overcompensate for the fact that I don't think his defense is going to stay like this. But yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised by that as well. He has played very good defense. The soft spot in the infield seems to be Ruben Tejada. And now, you know, we were talking about John Buck and he is only going to be the catcher for a month or a month and a half, whatever. And then yesterday, the news came out that Travis d'Arnaud fractured his left foot. So he's going to be out for a considerable period of time. Once again, that's the second year in a row where he's missed considerable amount of time. Now, we talked about him last week and talked about absolutely trading him. Now, what are you going to do with him? What do the Mets do now? Nothing, right?
Well, let me just say one thing. When you say we talked about absolutely trading him, we didn't decide that he should definitely be traded. We were saying if there's a deal out there for Stanton.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, sure.
I just want to be clear about that.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, I still like the guy. I mean, by all accounts, he's still going to be a top-notch hitter. Unfortunately, this sets him back for this season. You know, they don't know the severity of it yet, but he'll be out a couple of months. So maybe we'll see him in, you know, August or September. It's disappointing because he, you know, you traded a Cy Young Award winner for him, And he, first of all, didn't start the year with the team, which I thought was a big mistake. And second, now it's almost going to be a lost year. But it's scary. There are certain players who always get injured. Cliff Floyd, remember him? He was injured all the time.
Yep.
Moises Alou. Guys just always get injured. And I always wondered if their bodies are just susceptible to these things. Because some guys never get injured and some guys get injured all the time. So I'm just hoping Darno was not one of these guys who's constantly going to be injured. Because if that's the case, then I don't know what to do with him. If he's going to be that kind of guy, then move him from behind the plate. So many players are being moved from behind the plate because of injuries like this. Bryce Harper came up as a catcher. Well, was drafted as a catcher, and they put him in the outfield because they knew we're going to lose this guy for 20 games a year just from regular wear and tear. So let's move him from behind the plate. So if Darno is going to be injury prone like this, they can't leave him as a catcher.
Well, we hope not. I hope to see him someday in a Mets uniform, but I'm starting to think he's more like Martinez and Rhys Haven. It's just another long line of, wow, look what we got in the farm, and they never arrive.
I think it's too early to say that about Darno. He hasn't even had a chance. So I'm hoping that won't be the case. I think it's too early to say.
Yeah, that's fair enough, but I just think like that because we've seen so many. We've heard about all these guys and they never pan out. Now, yeah. But this weekend series with Washington, I think it's going to be big and it's going to be just magical tonight. Have you ever heard Matt Harvey interviewed?
They spoke to him during the game last week, I think. The day after one of his starts. I forgot exactly what he said, but I heard a little bit of him.
Yeah, that's what you mean. You said that right. You hear a little bit because you can't hear him. he was on ESPN's Baseball Tonight with Buster Olney. Mm-hmm. And I had to jack the volume way up in order to hear him. He is he's like very serious, but very, very monotone. And it's really cool to listen to him if you can listen, if your ears are that good. Yeah. But he is something else. I think he's going to light them up tonight. He doesn't seem like he's overtaken by the situation at all. He looks so comfortable in his own skin when he pitches, doesn't he?
Absolutely. That's the thing I've been saying since I first saw him last year. He just seems really comfortable out there. He bears down when he needs to. He just knows what he's doing out there. He doesn't get rattled by, if he lets up a hit or something, he doesn't get rattled. He instead bears down. So he's just got poise. He's great. And the funny thing is, everybody keeps saying whenever his name would come up, it'd be like, oh yeah, he's good. He's good, but Zach Wheeler's going to be better. If Zach Wheeler is somehow better than Matt Harvey, the Mets are going to have the greatest rotation in history. Being a little overdramatic there, but if Wheeler is better than Harvey, the Mets are going to have some good stuff going on.
Yep, I think you're right. Anyway, great stuff tonight. Well done.
Oh, we're done?
We're done already.
Okay.
You can find Mark Berman over at bloggingmets.com, and I insist that you do because he's serious stuff over there and not drivel, and that's a good thing. Anyway, that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank all my guests for making this an outstanding baseball show once again. It's the show I always dreamed about having. I always wanted to put together a baseball show that I'd actually want to listen to. And I guess thanks to these guys, we've accomplished that. Next week, more baseball, NBA playoff basketball. Jamie and I will be defending ourselves once again. And then more baseball. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly, thanks for listening. Good night and have a great weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.